The simple biological act of reproduction gets a whole lot more complicated when legal and moral issues are injected into the middle of it. Witness the battle over abortion for decades now in American politics. The country is waiting for a decision by the U.S. Supreme Court in a case concerning birth control and who should pay for it when a business provides health insurance for its workers. Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon is among many groups watching closely for the outcome of the case, and it is doing so in part by drawing attention to a 49-year-old case involving reproductive rights, Griswold versus Connecticut. Jimmy Radasta is the Communications Director at Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon and our guest on The Exchange. Jimmy, thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Jeff.
So the name of the group is just different enough to beg the question, I mean, how are you different from Planned Parenthood itself?
Sure. We are the statewide political voice on behalf of the 12 health centers that Planned Parenthood has across the state, including three in the Rogue Valley, one in Medford, one in Ashland, and one in Grants Pass. So we are the folks that are making sure that the right policies are in place and the right folks are in office so that we can remain the leading state in the country for reproductive freedom.
All right, so this is the kind of thing that insulates Planned Parenthood, the group that does things under a nonprofit status, from the political arm, essentially.
Exactly. We're independent.
All right, so the anniversary of Roe versus Wade is observed every year, but Griswold versus Connecticut is probably a little less well-known to a lot of people. What's that case all about?
Yeah, it's interesting. I learned a lot about it just this year myself, and it actually has a really interesting backstory. So the Griswold in Griswold versus Connecticut is Estelle Griswold, who was the director of the Planned Parenthood League of Connecticut. And the Connecticut is the state which passed in 1879 a law that was sponsored by P.T. Barnum. Yes, that P.T. Barnum, that was outlawing contraception. And it was rarely and arbitrarily enforced, but Estelle Griswold wanted to put the law to the test. And she was very forthright with authorities that what she was doing, that she was distributing birth control to married couples. And they fined her $100, and we had a case. And it went before the Supreme Court. She was arrested in 61, and then finally we got the decision 49 years ago this past week, and it laid the groundwork for Roe versus Wade. It established a right to privacy for married couples.
This is a world that's hard to imagine, certainly for people living today. So what was the availability, if any, of birth control at that time, certainly in Connecticut?
That's a good question. I believe that it was available, but like I said, this law was just randomly enforced. And so, it's hard to believe that there was a time when birth control was a controversial issue, and it's kind of even harder to believe that 49 years later, it's still a controversial issue.
And I had forgotten about the P.T. Barnum connection to Connecticut, but yes, the great showman was certainly long connected to the state of Connecticut. The timeline is important here, too, because the Griswold versus Connecticut decision came down 5 years after the Food and Drug Administration approved the first birth control pills for use. But there's another interesting thing on the timeline, because this is actually a very long time after Margaret Sanger opened the first birth control clinic in the country. So this is a much longer battle than I think people might think.
Yes. I mean, the fact that this dates back to 1879 and that we're still waiting for a Supreme Court decision about this particular issue is kind of mind-blowing.
So the aftereffects of Griswold were quite significant.
Yes. I mean, by establishing this right to privacy, it not only, like I said, laid the groundwork for Roe versus Wade, but most importantly, it made birth control available to women across the country. And this had a major impact on women's economic success. I mean, it essentially paved the way for women to become equal participants in American society, to enter the U.S. labor force in greater numbers, and to become a growing proportion of the family income. I just came across some research that shows that the availability of the pill is responsible for a third of women's wage increases relative to men. So by the 80s and 90s, the women who had early access to the pill were making 8% more each year than those who did not.
Simply because they weren't having to stop working periodically to have babies?
Yes. I mean, it's one of the greatest economic indicators of women's success is her access to be able to control the size of her family.
We are talking about contraception, birth control, and the pending Supreme Court decision in the Hobby Lobby case in the context of the 49-year-old decision in Griswold versus Connecticut. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk to Jimmy Radosta from Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon. Phone number is here, 800-838-3760, anywhere you hear us. In the Rogue Valley, it's 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So obviously there's some context here between Griswold and Hobby Lobby. So let's catch up to date then. I mean, what's basically going on with the Hobby Lobby case?
Well, the Hobby Lobby case, along with a parallel case brought by Conestoga Wood Products, this is part of a nationwide movement of there's altogether about 40 secular for-profit companies, most of them owned by men. And they're suing to deny their employees insurance coverage for birth control, which was required under the Affordable Care Act. And so they're advancing this extreme argument that that corporations should, and bosses should be able to impose their personal beliefs about birth control, including this misguided notion that it's equivalent to abortion, which is just simply untrue, both as a medical and a scientific matter.
So this is essentially the same set of issues that led to Rush Limbaugh calling a woman who testified before Congress a slut,
and Mike Huckabee saying that women, I believe he said that the Democratic Party wants to make women helpless without Uncle Sugar coming in to give them birth control.
Yes, the Uncle Sugar comment. Forgot about that one.
Yes.
So this all does get tied up, though, with the Affordable Care Act, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the Affordable Care Act is the greatest advancement for women's health in decades. So when people talk about repealing the Affordable Care Act, they're talking about going back to a time when women could be charged more for care than men, and when women could be denied coverage for pre-existing conditions like breast cancer, and when women would have to pay out of pocket for birth control. And these are, it's important to know that to emphasize what a big economic issue this is for women, because the cost of birth control each year is equivalent to 5 weeks of groceries for a family of four, 9 tanks of gas in a minivan, or a semester of college textbooks. And so over a woman's lifetime, we're talking $66,000, and that's significant.
That is a lot of money. Let us take a call here. We have Ann and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking reproductive rights in the context of the Hobby Lobby and Conestoga cases with Jimmy Radosta at Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon. Hi, Ann.
Thank you so much. I don't think that most men have any concept of what impact motherhood has on a woman's life. Having a child affects a woman's availability to get education, her prospects for getting a job, her prospects for promotion, and her ability to keep a job. And tie this to the fact that a woman doesn't even have to be conscious to get pregnant. You know, conception is not a voluntary act on the part of a woman. And there's also, in cases of rape and this sort of thing, a woman doesn't even have to be voluntarily engaged in sex.
And you flip that around, it's a very different landscape for men, absolutely.
Yes. And so, anyway, the idea that men should have their insurance cover, you know, Viagra and any other male condition, and not cover contraception just makes me gag. And I want to let you know that one of my two main charities is Planned Parenthood, because there's nothing more important than for a woman to have control over her reproductive life. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call, Ann. Appreciate it. Jimmy, I bet you can relate to most of what Ann said.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she hit on some great points. Thank you, Anne, for your support. It's it's really important to note that this is not only an economic issue, but it's a medical issue. 58% of birth control pill users cite health benefits as a contributing factor for using the pill, including treating endometriosis, menstrual pain, menstrual regulation. Increased access to birth control is directly linked to decreases in maternal and infant mortality, and it can reduce the risk of ovarian cancer. So the idea that this is turned into an ideological debate is rather ridiculous when we're talking 99% of American women between the ages of 15 and 44 who are sexually active have used birth control. So this is not a fringe issue, but it's being treated as if it's controversial, and it shouldn't be.
All right, let me pull that number apart just a little bit, because 99% use birth control, but not necessarily the pill.
Yes, exactly. Some form of birth control.
Okay.
At some point in their lives, and this is we're talking women of reproductive age who are sexually active.
All right. Now, as far as the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, people can use whichever term they choose. We'll use them interchangeably here as well. There was some wiggling around about what was going to be covered in terms of women's reproductive health, wasn't it? Wasn't there?
Yes. I was actually not with Planned Parenthood at the time that was being debated, but I know that we fought hard to make sure that that health care reform included women's health and that it treated birth control like any other preventative medicine. And that means that it should be covered without a copay.
But I do recall President Obama saying words to the effect of, it's not the company that has to buy this or provide this, it's the insurance company that has to provide this, which was a bit of a hair splitting, it seemed like.
Yes, I believe that is kind of a behind-the-scenes paperwork shuffle, so that basically if there are folks who have this moral objection, then they can make sure that their funds are not directly going to pay for it. But
we can see why the details in the case got rather intricate. But and it gets even more intricate because at least Hobby Lobby, if not Conestoga Wood Products as well, the issue was not so much that they opposed all birth control, but just certain types. Is that right?
I believe so. I know that there is this concerted effort out there to talk about certain forms of birth control, like the IUD, as causing an abortion, which is absolutely not the case. But then we're starting to get into details about when a pregnancy starts. There are some people who believe it starts at from the moment of fertilization, and the definition that most people use is at implantation. And so if you're going to, you know, get into that kind of nitty-gritty detail, then it opens up a whole different conversation. But the bottom line is that it's not a boss's business. It's not a boss's business to even be involved in a woman's personal medical decisions. That should be between her and her doctor. And that goes, that's our philosophy across the board.
Let me invite our listeners to join us again. We're talking to Jimmy Radasta, the communications director at Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon. We're talking about the pending Supreme Court decision in the Hobby Lobby and Conestoga Wood Products cases in the context of the 49-year-old decision in Griswold versus Connecticut that really allowed birth control to be more widely distributed, leading up to several years later the Roe versus Wade decision legalizing abortion across the country. Obviously, a continued battle over that decision as well. Join us on the exchange with your thoughts and comments on reproductive rights at 800-838-3760. That's around the region. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. I did dig into the details a bit in the Hobby Lobby case in particular. Hobby Lobby apparently is okay with birth control pills, but not with the Plan B or morning after pill or IUDs. And again, as you had just talked about, Jimmy, before fertilization, they were okay with it. Once fertilization has taken place, if implantation is denied, that is viewed as something like a medical abortion. So what had happened, though, in the lower court rulings? This seems to have gotten to the Supreme Court pretty fast.
Yes, actually did not follow it before it got to the Supreme Court. I think the real concern here is actually that now that it is before the Supreme Court, it's the precedent that it could set. And this goes actually way beyond birth control, because it would establish for the first time ever a precedent in which for-profit businesses and corporations are afforded individual religious rights. And so this could allow, for example, bosses to deny coverage for any medical procedures that their personal beliefs don't agree with, like vaccines, surgeries, or mental health care, HIV/AIDS treatment. And our biggest concern, actually, as we saw with the Oregon Family Council's failed attempt to put a ballot measure before voters in November that would have allowed businesses to turn away same-sex couples, this really could create this slippery slope where it would not only affect women's rights, but also LGBT rights.
Well, and this is where it gets really interesting, because it's not just about reproductive rights, but it also gets into the way it's being cast as a religious conscience situation where, you know, should we have to provide something that we disagree with that goes beyond our own set of beliefs? And this raises, then it becomes a religious freedom kind of issue rather than just a reproductive freedom issue, which I imagine led to some fairly spirited debate at the Supreme Court.
Yes, I believe so. There is another Supreme Court case that's pending. I just want to also mention for people to keep an eye out of this, because both of these decisions will be coming down this month. But it involved the Massachusetts buffer zone law, which establishes a 35-foot zone outside of all reproductive centers to ensure that patients can access their health services without having to run through this gauntlet. And one of the most remarkable things that I heard coming out of the oral arguments there was that Scalia actually said these people aren't protesters, they're just sidewalk counselors. And then it was later revealed that his wife is actually directly involved in this work, and so he probably should have recused himself from that case. But yes, this is what happens when, usually when a predominantly male-dominated court is in charge of addressing, you know, women's health issues.
There's a lot of handicapping that goes on after the oral arguments, because the questioning can often indicate the position from which somebody is coming. And of course, the general ideological divide in the Supreme Court is known. So given the handicapping that's taken place so far, is there a sense of how this case might land?
Well, like most cases, it all comes down to Justice Kennedy. And already there, based on some of the questions that he asked, there is a concern that he views this as an abortion case, and it's not, as I've said before. And so it is not looking like it could go in our favor, but you never know. And the bottom line is we want people, when this decision does come down, to be fully aware of what exactly is going on. Regardless of how it turns out, to turn out to vote in November to make sure that they have folks in office who actually reflect this majority opinion. I mean, we're talking like, I believe 2/3 of Americans believe that the ACA should be able to cover birth control without copays, and that it's not your boss's business to be involved in those decisions.
Let's take a couple of quick calls. We have Bill in Etna, California on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jimmy Radasta.
Hello. I just wanted to make a couple of quick points, or try to make them quick. The Hobby Lobby case really has nothing to do with Christianity. There's nothing in the New Testament about abortion or birth control, and it's a real thin veneer, I think, for basically what's a plutocratic agenda. And as regard to the previous caller, I think there are men in power who know what childbirth and child raising does to a woman, and that's part of the plan, along with ever-growing global population, to create desperation among the masses. Maybe a wild idea, but I'll leave it. I could go on and on, but
overpopulation and oppression. Then, all right, interesting viewpoint. Is that something you've heard before, then, Jimmy?
Yes, I mean we frequently hear from people who are supporters of Planned Parenthood for all sorts of reasons. We actually believe that a woman should be the one to decide the size of her family, and that's the bottom line. And we've seen an unprecedented attack on women's reproductive freedom in the past, I believe, 3 years. More restrictions have been passed across the country than in the entire previous decade. And what's going on in Texas in particular is very concerning to us. The bill that was passed last year has created a public health crisis in some of the poorest and most remote regions of our country. Down near the Mexican border, there are women buying contraception from flea markets, or they're crossing over the Mexican border to self-induce an abortion by buying pills off the black market. And this is pre-Roe activity. This is what we've fought so long to prevent from happening. And for these politicians to say that they're passing these laws somehow to protect women's health, it's a complete lie. And I think we're really going to see a big turnout in this year's election as a result.
Does I assume there are Planned Parenthood advocates groups across the country. Do you have the capacity to assist?
Yes, actually, we sent a couple of our field staff to assist with the Stand With Texas Women bus tour that followed Wendy Davis's historic filibuster last year, and we were thrilled to be able to lend a hand. But right now we're concentrating on Oregon.
All right. Apologies to Rick and Eugene. Didn't have time to take your call, but I want to thank Jimmy Radosta, the Communications Director at Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon, for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange. The Supreme Court should rule by the end of the month.